the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton. Available also at any craft beverage retailer of repute near you. And the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. It is the 239th, I believe, installment of this distinguished, oh so distinguished podcast. Recording last podcast of July for you, July 31st, for your reference if you're listening later this week. My name's Bart. Here are my friends. I've got Patrick Murphy with us. Murph Alert, what is up?
Not much. Just here to put on a good show.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's what we want to give the people, a good show. Also, to help give them a good show, Ralph Schudel. Ralph, what's going on?
Not much. Trying to figure out where this year's going. I can't believe we're getting ready to turn the calendar to August.
Yeah, good Lord. It is. This has gone by pretty fast, to say the least. We've also got Alex Stanek. Alex, what other washed-up AC Milan play, former AC Milan players are you looking for the crew to target this summer?
Well, there's talk that Kaká is not going to renew with Orlando City, so that's always an option. Ibrahimovic?
Okay, I'd accept that. We'd accept that, I think.
So, there are a couple.
Okay. No, that's acceptable.
Sadly, the Galaxy have claimed his rights, so he's not free to come to the crew.
Zlatan's his own man.
Yeah, but we got that first allocation spot. We can make a deal.
That means he already. And doesn't LA already have three DPs? Isn't that the whole thing that they just added? Dos Santoses.
Good point.
Has that ever stopped them before?
That's true. It's Don Garber. We're getting into this, and I forgot to welcome, of course, Sam Fahmy, who's also here with us. Sam, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing well. I'm only here to counter Pat Murphy's attempt to make a good show.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It's as if we don't self-sabotage enough on our own just by our nature. We've got Sam actively trying to subvert the show. This is,
well, you know, Chris is no longer on the show, and I feel that we're getting a little soft. So maybe I take that saboteur approach. Don't you shake your head at me.
too much Sunshine Brigade for the people. We need to get down. We're going to have a gritty reboot of the Massive Report podcast this week. We do have a lot to talk about. I know we say that every week, but you know, with an exciting team like Columbus Crew SC, they're certainly never wanting for news coverage. Of course, a big news this weekend in that the crew actually picked up a point on the road with a draw in Utah. So that's just the second draw of the season for Columbus. And we'll recap that pretty exciting game for a 2-2 draw, that is for sure. Nico Ness, one of the returners in the lineup for that game, will look at dissect his performance in particular and see what that might mean for Crew SC down the road. The transfer window is starting to inch its way close, and we're all here wondering whether Crew SC are going to act, as we mentioned earlier, holding that top spot in the allocation order, but does that mean anything? Spoiler alert, no. Don Garber makes the rules as he goes. But we'll talk about that anyway. We'll take a look elsewhere around the league, give you an official preview of the MLS All-Star Game. It's happening. There, we're done with that. And maybe look at the Gold Cup, some other news from around the league. Video assistant replay is a-coming, and preview the match this weekend with the San Jose Earthquakes. But first, Smurf, let's take us back to beautiful Salt Lake City, Utah, for Saturday's big 2-2 draw against RSL.
Yeah, you already hit on a couple of the points I was going to make with you know, an exciting game, obviously, and four goals scored. The team gets a point, the second draw of the year. Obviously, I think you'd want to get a win, especially going up early as they did in this game. But, you know, you're playing your third game in 8 days. You're playing at altitude. You're down two center backs who potentially would have featured because of the red cards from Philly the week before. So, you know, going out there, playing at altitude also, I think getting that draw, and we've talked a lot about how this team might have been different the first half of the season if they had a handful of draws in there instead of some losses. I think, you know, especially when you get down 2-1 early in the second half and it looks like RSL is kind of taking control of the game and you've just run out of gas, you know, a pretty good result. And obviously both teams had some other chances to score some goals. Ola Kamara in particular had two really good ones, a header in the second half, and then one where he beats the offside trap and is one-on-one with Raimondo and just puts it wide, one that he was still talking about today at practice. But, you know, opportunities there. Salt Lake had some opportunities as well. Both Alex Crenali and Nico Hansen, or Nico Ness, I'm sorry, had to clear shots off the line. You know, I mean, it was an entertaining game for, you know, what I expected to be a Crew team that didn't have much left. They found ways to create chances. Defensively, obviously not as good as we've seen with the three-man backline, but having to kind of change things around, and we can touch on individual players, but, you know, I think it was all in all a decent result given all the extraneous factors that came into it.
And one player who also, you know, even with the two goals, I'm looking here now, 20 shots total for RSL as they were generating a lot of offense with that, their attacking four throughout the game. But Zach Steffen with five saves, I believe that's tying a season high. But I'd argue, too, some of the most acrobatic saves that he's had to make all season, and that's not counting the ones also that went off the post. And he was a guy that was tested a lot throughout the game and really put on another strong performance.
Yeah, I mean, Steffen, for me, over the past, I'll give him three games, even going back to Philadelphia the previous Saturday night, has done really, really well, and I think has proven himself, like we said, I believe last week, that this kid has all the potential to be another legendary Crew SC backstop. You know, he's done a really good job, albeit he didn't have much to do the previous Saturday night. Wednesday night against Philly, when we went down nine men, you know, he was a catalyst at the back for keeping the game, you know, presumably, you know, going 8 or 9-0. Of course, I'm being slightly facetious, but, you know, there were a couple chances that this scoreline could have gotten incredibly out of hand. And then again on Saturday night in Sandy, Utah, you know, he's done just a tremendous job of keeping the guys in line at the back. And one thing that I kind of wanted to give him props for is every penalty kick he's taken this year, I'm fairly certain, guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe he's guessed right or gotten a fingertip on at least part of it. And he's done, you know, a very good job at keeping the guys composed when they've got tremendous adversity, and I really respect him for that.
Well, he didn't take any penalty kicks, but he's faced a couple. I think, you know, we've talked about it numerous times, and, you know, to go back to the Philadelphia game last Wednesday, obviously he makes the save on the penalty kick to keep the team at 1-0. You know, you're down a man, but at 1-0 on the road, and especially given how it plays out right after that, they have a chance that Ola Kamara puts off the crossbar. You know, if you get back in the game with a goal there, you have a lot to thank Zach Steffen for, and they did anyway, but, you know, obviously it didn't go that way. They weren't able to score. But yeah, Zach's been huge. You know, going up against a goalie who gets a lot of credit around this league for all the records he's either set or about to set, Nick Raimondo. Yeah, I think Zach Steffen, you know, showcased his ability. I think, you know, we've talked about a lot that this team isn't on national TV enough for fans to really get to know a lot of these players around the league. But yeah, it won't surprise me if Zach Steffen starts to get some recognition nationally here, assuming he continues to play this way, you know, going into the next year and beyond.
Well, in the front trio for RSL, Silva, Plata, and Cervino, I'm just looking at it here, and it looks like they combined for more than, that's 6, 10, and 6. So a total of 12 shots, including more than five of those on goal, and they were really really picking apart that crew back line. Of course, we mentioned some of the new faces in the lineup, in Ness, who came back in after some time, you know, in Greg Berhalter's doghouse, and Josh Williams filling in as well as both Abubakar and Mensah were both out of the lineup. And certainly, I think we're happy, obviously, to get that draw. And there are arguments, obviously, that opportunity. Ola had to complete that hat trick. Finley putting one off the post, but I believe that resulted in a Ola goal. But should we be concerned about the amount of chances when we're looking at this back three? Is that supposed to be a bit more of a stabilizing force for them because they've got that reliance there? It's not, you know, just two people on an island. Now it's three. But the amount of chances that they're generating through balls that got through and resulted in high quality chances should be a little bit concerning, no?
Yeah, no, I think it's concerning, but I also think we have to keep it in perspective given the schedule that the crew have had recently. I think if they had a full-strength squad out there and we were conceding that many chances, I think we would have reason to be very concerned. Given that there was a lot of rotation this week, I think it's probably less of an issue. Like people have said, we've had to move guys in and out. We're also missing Federico Higuain, which I think really does hurt us on both ends of the ball, especially on the attacking side. So overall, I think it was an acceptable performance from the team. I thought Zach Steffen had another amazing performance like we've talked about. One thing that continues to impress me about him is his positioning and his just general awareness of where his defenders are, how he kind of sets everything up. I think he's a player playing above his age, and hopefully we can hang on to him for a while. But overall, I didn't see any real reasons to be concerned in this game, given the amount of changes that we had to make. But if we see this continuing week after week with a full-strength squad out there, then I would probably start to be a little bit concerned.
I think there's major reason to have concern even in this game, whether it's rotating players in and out or not, because even with not a full-strength squad, you had the opportunity to win the game. You really did, and you had it more than once. So there's a very concerning thing about players. You know that you have the players that have the ability to win these games, and when you basically, I'm going to say, yeah, it was a comeback to get a point, but when you could have really won the game, and if you had Higuain, you could have probably won it 2, 3, or 4 goals going out. So I am incredibly concerned about, one, the inability to finish by other players not named Ola Kamara, Justin Miram, or Federico Higuain. I mean, Ethan basically had, it was not a tight angle, he did go around Raimondo, and he hit it in the bar. I mean, he is terrified and excited all at the same time, but this is ridiculous that he can't finish that. Ola Kamara's finish was very nice and patient, but had RSL not knew how to defend that ball, that he could have skied it too, but he didn't. So I don't understand why this team plays well below its level that it can play. When they string passes together and when they get on the attack, they can be deadly, yet for some reason they can't do that. And then if you look at the defense, the amount of balls that passed, and you're just looking at players just staring at the ball as it goes across the box, that is incredibly concerning. I don't know how to stop that. I don't know what would be the best way to stop that, but it seems that we apply no pressure, and I think Dwight said it actually multiple times, and I agree with him. We apply no pressure when players are playing the cross. We apply no pressure to players coming from the back when the ball is bounced out, and like we saw in Philly, these plays ended in goals, and that's, you know, this has to be fixed. This has to be fixed somehow. This team has been consistently showing that this is dangerous, and it's living on the edge. But there's no reason for it to be that way.
Well, and I think if you're gonna say that Columbus, you know, that they generated some chances that they should have capitalized on, Ola's, Ethan's, you also look at the two goals that they did score And those were the result of kind of broken, odd plays, you know, good bounces that came to Ola, and credit to him for clinically finishing when he had the opportunity. But if we're going to say that Columbus could have, you know, had chances they could have capitalized on, then I think it really underscores even more so Zach Steffen's contribution in this game, because this game, they could have easily, with just an average goalkeeper, found themselves down 4-0 or something. With the way that some of the big saves, in the way that that back three was just bleeding opportunities, it looked like, to Silva, Plata, and co.
Yeah, I think you saw in this game why they've been going with Lawless in particular, and even Jonathan. You know, Bart, you mentioned, you know, Nico Ness being in the doghouse. I think it's just a lack of confidence for him right now. I mean, he didn't look at all like the player that we saw earlier in the season. To me, you know, I don't know if it has to do with playing in the back three and he's not as comfortable with that, or if he's just, you know, out of rhythm, out of, you know, confidence, as I said. But, you know, a couple times he was beat. He did have a couple of nice balls he played, which you expect from him. He did have, obviously, the save on the goal, or the potential goal, but, you know, just didn't look like the defender we saw last year and at the beginning of the season. And Josh Williams, I thought, had a pretty poor game. You know, he looked a step slow, I thought, in a lot of plays. RSL's pretty good at playing those quick passes. You know, it just, I think if they're going to roll with this back three, and I think the jury's still out on whether or not that's the answer to the defensive problems. You saw the way Philly was able to create the goal, even when it was, you know, 11v11. I think that, you know, I don't think they've found an answer yet, at least not consistently. The issues seem to still be there. You know, you do have three guys back, but, you know, those guys have to be able to, you know, stop chances and things like that. And you look at the way RSL is able to climb back in the game and create more chances and whatnot. And, you know, it's just, I think you're still seeing a lot of the same issues. It's just happening from a different formation.
The big concern I had for it, and I wrote about this in the scouting report at the start of the week, was the run of play that RSL seems to run with on a weekly basis. Because if you look at the stats, they had 663 passes and their passing accuracy was at 88%, which is pretty darn good compared to Crew SC, who had 329 passes with a 74% accuracy. And I know for somebody who plays a possession-oriented style of soccer like Berhalter, that's not something he's really going to want to hang his hat on a Saturday night in Utah.
Well, and I think you have to, you know, take some of those stats, throw some of those stats out, because they didn't come out to play the normal style in this game. You know, given all of the circumstances going into the game that we talked about earlier, you know, they clearly came to try and sit back and get what they could out of this match. I mean, you know, at one point Salt Lake had 72% of the ball, which is not what the Crew do. It was, let's try and grind out a result. Hopefully we can do something. I mean, after they scored that goal, I don't know if they had completed three passes in a row for like a 15-minute span. So it wasn't the normal crew system, I think, that we're used to seeing. And, you know, even in Philly, I think that you could make the same argument due to the red cards. So we're still, I think, waiting to see, you know, how this system works with the three in the back, given that, you know, they've played the opponents that they've played and the situations that they've put themselves in.
And Patrick, one thing I wanted to ask you that we've heard numerous times, both you and I, is this lack of confidence with Nico Ness. You know, Berhalter's obviously alluded to it. I don't know if I buy that necessarily. I think he might be, you know, in Cincinnati, he picked up a little bit of a knock. I don't know maybe if he's coming back from fitness. What do you interpret that lack of confidence as?
I just think he's not playing well. You know, he's admitted that his confidence took a hit when there was a stretch of three games where he didn't play at all, right around that Cincinnati game. And you mentioned the knock, you know, he was medically fine. You know, he was taken out of the game precautionarily, but medically cleared, and it was more performance-based. You know, they weren't seeing it from him in training. They weren't seeing it from when he got on the field. In Cincinnati, you know, obviously he gets hurt in Minnesota when he does get a start pretty early in that game, so doesn't really get a chance to kind of build on that. you know, and I don't know how much time he's really had to work at the three in the back. You know, they were doing that a lot with some of the backup guys in preseason or in friendly games against college teams and whatnot. So, you know, I know Jonathan had mentioned that they had not trained with it a lot, and he had to kind of get thrown into the fire there. But, you know, yeah, I think it's just a lack of form, a lack of, you know, whatever you want to call it. He's just not playing at the same level that he was earlier in the season. And, you know, obviously they could use him to get back to that level.
Well, we've seen a lot of, you know, different faces rotating there in that back line, but we've also over these past few weeks seen a number of people there on the right side at that right back position. Of course, Harrison Offal, at least coming into the season, that looked like something that he had clamped down for himself. He's had some struggles this year that we've documented on here, and obviously dealing with injuries right now. Hector Jimenez has been starting in his stead up until this past Saturday when the young boy, Connor Maloney, the 22-year-old, getting his first career MLS start and getting an apple, an assist, in that game, setting up Ola Kamara's opening goal. And fellas, what do we think about the performance there from Connor Maloney and his future prospects with this team?
I think Connor, first of all, his pass on the assist was fantastic. But I think, you know, you saw him come in the Frankfurt game, or at least whoever was there saw him come into the Frankfurt game, and really put hustle out, you know. He ran at every ball. He had some good crosses. He kind of pressured high. He did everything that you were hoping that a rookie would do. And honestly, the way I look at it, aside from the fact that he played well in this particular game, is that you look at the number of players that are under 25 that are on this roster right now, and how their development has been just from the beginning of the year, and the kind of talent that they've shown. And this is probably the most number of draft picks that have stuck around in a long, long time. And they have all have shown to be quality draft picks, whether it's Nico Hansen, whether it's Abu Bakar, whether it's Connor Maloney. I mean, you name it. So that's a really good bright side. I think he's going to end up seeing more time, but then you're starting to really run out of minutes to give guys to see the field, you know, especially on that right side, whether it's Ethan, Kakutamane, which is actually he's starting to relieve Justin Miram now, or Christian Martinez, who's kind of trying to get in, or, you know, Nico Hansen when he comes back from injury. So you got a lot of options there on the right. Unfortunately, I don't think any of them are good enough or developed enough to make a huge difference right now. But I think a year, maybe 2 years down the road, there are going to be some really, really good players down that side. And by the way, I had Stefan as my man of the match for the Philly game, which is a strange thing when you have three goals in. But it would have been Abu Bakar had he not gotten that red card, though I think the first yellow was a load of crap.
It's funny you mentioned the age there, Sam, because Greg brought that up today, and I know shortly after that, Precourt must have been listening.
Tony, he
tweeted about it. But, this team is young, and that's kind of what Greg said is, you know, he doesn't think that that's been brought up enough, you know, because beyond the guys that you mentioned, Sam, you know, Artur, Zach, I mean, these guys are 22, 21 years old. Even Will Trapp, who obviously has been around a long time, is still rather young. Alex Crenali, you know, they're relying on a lot of youth. Nico Hansen, I do think that is a valid point. But I do think it also kind of comes across as a bit of an excuse. You know, this team wasn't talking preseason, hey, we're a young team, it's going to take us some time. You know, I don't think they knew exactly what they had, to be fair, but Greg made the point that that their average starting age this year was 25, or in this game this weekend was 25.2 in comparison to RSL's, which was 27.2. And I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but two full years on average between you and the opponent makes a big difference. And, you know, the point he made was that they you know, they're the second youngest team in the league. But even if you look at, you know, the number of minutes that these rookies, that these young guys have played, you know, according to, you know, what they've kept track of, you know, they're head and shoulders above everyone else in that metric, I guess. So, you know, and you combine that with the fact that this is the most points that they've had, 23 games or whatever it is in the season under Berhalter. You know, I think there's some validity to it. I also think, though, that I would understand why fans would think that kind of comes out as an excuse if you want to take it that way. But, you know, I think the longer these guys go on, the better they're going to get, you hope. And, you know, as you make a push for the playoffs and some of the older guys get back in the lineup, maybe that helps shore some things up.
The youth thing is really interesting to me because I'm not sure it's even going to matter in the long run whether the team is young or old. In a league like Major League Soccer, where you have, you know, 40%, 35% turnover in an off season, it's really hard to build a totally young team. You might be able to keep a couple kind of core players like Crenali, Stefan, Lawless, perhaps, Will Trapp. But a lot of these guys are just going to get cycled through to other teams. You know, if you have a bunch of young talent, their contracts are going to run up and they're going to say, hey, I'm 2 years older than I was before. I'm better than I was before. I wanted a better contract than I had before. And if you're already pushing up against the salary cap, that's going to present a real problem. So I do think it's pretty much an excuse, and it's something that fans shouldn't read too much into, because in a capped league, you can't just keep these young kids around and then develop them all the way till they're 28, 29, and then have this superstar squad. They're going to move on to other Major League Soccer teams more than likely. Other Major League Soccer players are going to come to the Columbus Crew more than likely. And the team that we see now is going to look radically different than the team that we see 5 years from now.
Well, thanks there, Buzzkill. Hold on.
Are we going to the same place here, Sam? I feel like
I think we might be going to the same place, but Sunshine Brigade.
Did they just become best friends?
Sunshine Brigade just went cloudy and thunderstorms. You know.
These kids,
at least, like, how many of those have we talked about are actual draft picks? And those are bound by at least, I'm going to guess, at minimum, a 3-year contract. Okay? So let's start with there. So you have those kids at minimum for 3 years. Unless you're going to trade them or somebody's going to...
Picks, they're 1 year.
Yeah, I think draft picks
really?
Are 1 year contracts.
Yeah, I thought their rookie contracts were 3 years.
No. Pasifici didn't get his contract renewed. I'm thinking of, like, the most obscure guy right now.
I thought they were just
Ben Sweat's another one. No, they're 1 year deals, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
I'm pretty sure that's right.
All
right,
well, in that case, never mind. But thanks for thunderstorming on that idea.
Well, Sam, let me salvage your argument here real quick, because Chris, Alex, for the 1 second that I disagree with you, you know, a team that could be really successful that I'd like to reference with the youth movement is FC Dallas. You know, they've gone through players like Jesse Gonzalez, Hollingshead, Matt Hedges. They've kept that core pretty well intact, with the exception of adding people like Maxi Arruti in the reentry draft. But you
and
know,
Hernan Grana.
Yeah, or I heard he might be getting homesick soon, though. But, you know, they had Tesho Akindele, all these guys. And, I mean, they had a great youth group, and they were the class of the West for a little bit. So, I mean, what's saying that we can't be the class of the East with this youth movement?
Well, a couple things there. First of all, I think a lot of those guys are homegrown guys, which changes the contract stuff. And also, what does Dallas want? You know, like, I mean, you hear about their great academy, and, you know, obviously they had
the supporter shield in the Open Cup, I think.
But
recently.
Like, you know, I mean, I guess if that's your goal, then that's, you know, that's great. But, you know, so they've got one supporter shield in what, the last 20 plus years. Like, I just think that while Dallas has certainly potentially set itself up for the future, Alex makes some good points about, you know, keeping these guys here and whatnot. And, you know, if they haven't, you know, if it hasn't proven to win that you can build off an academy team yet. Now, I'm not saying it can't in the future, and I think that's certainly something that, as, you know, more of these teams start buying Dos Santos's and other people for $5 million plus that teams like Columbus aren't going to spend the money on, you're going to have some of that. But, you know, I think the youth has to be mixed with the veterans, and you know, maybe that's why you've seen so much inconsistency with Columbus this year, is because of so many young kids playing.
One thing I do want to say in defense of this whole argument is that it does position the Crew, whether we keep these guys or not, it positions the Crew in a way where they can make profit off a lot of these players. And that profit can then be reinvested in the academy, in the team itself, the senior squad. However you want to use that money, that's an option that we would have with a lot of these young guys. Giancarlo Gonzalez, for me, was one of the best deals that any Major League Soccer team has ever made, potentially in the history of the league. I think it was a great move to sign him. I think it was a great move to sell him. And if we can continue to do things like that, we will be very well positioned for the future. But I think when a lot of fans hear youth movement, the kind of things that they think about are, you know, Barcelona, you know, the La Masia Academy system where they built these, they brought these incredible young players through, Xavi Hernandez, Andres Iniesta, Lionel Messi, all these players, and they brought them from, you know, 13, 14 years old all the way into, you know, stardom and becoming a superstar.
That's the Crew Academy's not that good.
That's very difficult to do in Major League Soccer because...
Don't you talk about Ben Swanson like that.
Yeah, but it's tough to do in this league, just the way that the league is structured, different from other leagues around the world. And so while I do think it's beneficial to have a young core and to not have to worry about your star players getting old and declining, I do think it's maybe not as beneficial as it would be if the league were structured differently. So I understand why Precourt wants to get credit for it, but I also think that it's more on the business side of things than it is maybe on the playing field side of things, because at some point these guys are going to want better contracts and we're going to have to find that money somewhere or move them on.
Well, with this coming up, you know, we're looking at these young players, and that's obviously, you know, the contributions that we can get from them, that Columbus can get from them this year, are obviously beneficial. But looking at this window, if this team is, you know, a playoff contender, dare I say, an MLS, you know, has plans of trying to get back to the MLS Cup final, I think they might have to supplement it with a proven player right now, adding it. The window, transfer window is still open. You're seeing other teams in the conference making big moves to add players, albeit Orlando getting Dom Dwyer via a trade as opposed to signing. But, you know, with moves like that for an Orlando team that is right behind Columbus in the standings, with a game in hand, 2 points behind Crew for that final spot. And just to give you a little bit of context too, Columbus with 32 points in sixth in the Eastern Conference. FC Dallas, that we were just talking up with their great youth system, second in the Western Conference with 34 points. So that lets you know a little bit about the depth in the East and how tough it is going to be for Columbus to get out and get into the playoffs with it. So do they need to make a move here during this with this transfer window open? And there's been a lot of rumors circulating about that top spot in the allocation that Columbus has. What does that mean in practice, though, for this team?
You know, I think the team, and I've been beating this point like a drum over the past couple of weeks, it seems, really needs to search for that second striker because, you know, Adam John, I know Sam's a big fan of him. You know, you get Big Nasty over in the corner and, you know, he gets to fight off players in the corner. It's just not, it's not feasible to have a striker like him around. I mean, I understand he can shut a game down, but I really want somebody that if Ola Kamara, God forbid, goes down, we're not going to miss any, you know, productivity at all or anything like that. Now, I know that we've had discussions of selling our allocation spot to Sporting Kansas City. Pat put an article out last week about it. And Pat, are there any developments with that?
Only negatively. There was an article written by that was on KansasCity.com, which is the Kansas City Stars website, about, you know, kind of the snag in the Christian Nemeth's return to MLS. And basically what it was saying was, you know, they made the trade for Dwyer thinking then that they could, or made the trade to get rid of Dwyer thinking then they could bring Nemeth back, who played there in 2015. And then now they're having, well, he's having issues with his club in Qatar about the buyout clause. So until anything, you know, materializes there, you know, there's no point in them making the trade for the top spot. So, you know, we'll see if that gets worked out, but it doesn't look as much of a sure thing as maybe it did when Dwyer was gone and, you know, Dwyer was traded and Nemeth looked to be on his way back to MLS.
Is there any possibility that we might even look at, I know Omar Gonzalez was rumored for a while too, but, you know, perhaps maybe with his Gold Cup performance like we've discussed, that we'll be discussing later in the show, do you see Caressi even maybe bringing a defender in?
The team is maxed out on center backs, I believe.
we've cornered the market on center backs.
Yeah, I don't think you can, maybe if you really want to address that maybe in the offseason, but it would surprise me if they go after another center back with the number that they have there and whatnot, especially since some of them are young guys. You know, whether you like it or not, Jonathan Mensah's under contract here for a little while. It's, you know, it's not like these guys are headed out the door anytime soon necessarily. So no, I don't think so. And I also don't think, you know, I think that Omar Gonzalez stuff broke down for certain reasons. And, you know, I don't know if there would be any reason that would have changed at this point, I guess.
It's kind of tricky because of the way the Crew roster is kind of set up. You know, you have roster spots open, but you're also out of international spots. So that, and I don't want to say Greg tends to favor the internationals, but let's be honest, Greg tends to favor the internationals. So, but I agree on the need for a striker or a winger who can score that is not named Justin Miram. So I'll take somebody on the right side that is more willing to take shots and score than even a striker. I'll take whatever. That actually makes it harder. It makes it easier to get another striker on the field. Makes it harder on teams to cover all three heads.
Well, I know somebody liked my Darren Maddox comment from last week.
Well, and I think one of the reasons... That's also, if you can just, we'll get that in post and just record that sound effect, and that's our preview of the MLS All-Star Game. But, you know, looking at that, the international, I think part of the reason that you see Greg targeting the amount of international players that he does is the fact that, you know, there is a somewhat limited pool of MLS players that, you know, MLS quality players, American born, or, you know, players that you don't need an international spot for you to choose from. And so if you want to get those impact players that are, you know, from elsewhere, he has to look at other, especially for good prices where you can do good business, he has to look elsewhere outside the U.S. borders in other countries. And I think that's part of the reason that he's looked for those international spots. And obviously, Crew acquired that extra one, but there's a little bit of, you know, debate over whether that's, you know, there so they're able to operate within the bounds of Don Garber's MLS rules for the year, or if that is to acquire another MLS international player. But I know one of the questions, or one of the players that's been linked with Murillo for a while, Murph, any other updates on that front, or does that seem to be a pretty dead lead?
I haven't heard anything in a while.
He's on loan. He signed a contract on loan.
Oh, did he? Okay.
So he's done.
Well, that makes sense then why I haven't heard anything. But that was not one that I was super optimistic about. I mean, I'd heard that maybe it wasn't dead, but that, you know, the talks had certainly cooled. So I stopped looking into it as extensively. And yeah, if he signed, then they're probably not going to get him.
Well, speaking of that wonderful international flavor, the good old US of A did get a little something done on the international stage last week, capturing the Gold Cup for the sixth time, I believe, in our proud nation's history. Big contributions throughout that tournament, actually from among players, Omar Gonzalez, a guy who might have really played himself back into the national team picture as a starter going forward. Some other good contributions from MLSers, Jordan Morris, obviously, with that big game-winning goal. But fellas, what do we think, Alex, about this tournament and the performance from the U.S. team and what that means for this program heading into 2018, the World Cup, as well as for MLS and development?
Well, I think it was a good performance overall. I mean, obviously, when you go into a tournament, you want to win it, especially the Gold Cup, which is a tournament that the United States kind of hopes to win every time they go into it. The final itself was pretty entertaining. I believe the U.S. scored first, I think. Yeah, they did. And then Jamaica followed up shortly thereafter. Jordan Morris lost his man on a set piece, and Jamaica were able to score. But then Jordan Morris, towards the end of the game, just a couple minutes left in the game, made up for it, and got the game winner. So it was a good performance. It was good to see kind of the team out there and try to start building towards that World Cup, try to get some momentum going into the qualifiers. So I think it was good. And whenever you can go out on the international stage and perform well, I think it creates new fans too. I think a lot of U.S. fans and a lot of MLS fans kind of get into things through the national team. So a good performance on the international stage, on national television, it's a good thing. But now we have to get down to business and get these World Cup qualifiers done and win those games, because that's, at the end of the day, what everybody really cares about. The Gold Cup, it's a fun trophy to win and it's a fun tournament to take place in, but it's not going to make anybody super happy at the end of the day.
Yeah, and the thing with the tournament, I agree with Alex on that, is, you know, everybody, even the casual fan, can get up and say, oh, USA against, you know, whoever else, you know, and then the patriotism kind of kept, you know, gets everybody excited and gets it going. I think it was a great performance. A lot of players that really impressed me were like Kellen Rowe, you know, Dempsey maybe transitioning into a you know, super sub kind of role now with him getting a little bit older in his career. Timmy Howard, you know, even though I give him a lot of crap, he's still got it somehow. You know, and Omar Gonzalez was great. I really liked the FC Dallas kids, not to hit that, you know, too hard again, but they did a nice job. One thing I said about this on Twitter, and I know a couple fans will like this, is you know, I had to go to bed and get ready for work in the morning, and I went and took a shower at about the 82nd minute, and right as I got out of the shower, Morris scored, and I knew that that was going to happen, and I was going to miss that clutch moment. So I didn't see that live, but you're welcome, America. I won us the Gold Cup.
You're so selfless, Ralph. Thank you. Thank you for your invaluable contributions.
You'll still never live up to Magic Poopies. Just saying.
What a great story.
But, you know, as we were watching, there are moments in that game where you're just thinking, though, boy, Zach Steffen would look really, really good in that red, white, and blue jersey. And I'm hoping during these qualifiers or maybe during camp in January that he's a guy who gets a call up, because you do, as a U.S. men's national team fan, that you know, most of us are, certainly we want to compete and have a chance during the World Cup and field the squad that gives us the best opportunity to compete and go somewhere in 2018. But when you look at the guys that have been trotted out there regularly, with the exception of Ben Hamid, who got a start during this tournament before they brought in all the greatest hits for the knockout stage, it's again, zombie Tim Howard, Brad Guzan, who's just awful, Nick Raimondo, who wasn't, you know, on
can
this,
I make can
on
I make a quick point on Guzan real quick?
Sure.
I saw a interview he did for the Atlanta Orlando game. He's got Brad Friedel's fake English accent now.
Oh, God, that makes him just even more insufferable.
So I just thought I'd share that with you because I knew you would appreciate that, Bart.
Oh, no, that I mean, so we absolutely need to get him out of it. He's just, he doesn't seem like he's got – there's he's not the future of the national team. How soon does Zach Steffen get the reins handed over to him, guys?
I think January camp. I think you made a great point. You have nothing to lose generally in that camp, and that's where you bring in a lot of those fringe players. It makes perfect sense to me.
Can I be honest? Like, really honest? You're always honest. I don't want to see any crew, young crew developing players go to the national team right now. Because the last...
Are you unpatriotic?
No. It's for their sake and their own development. I'm American, too, and I want to see the national team do well. And I'm happy that Bruce Arena has taken over because he is one of my favorite coaches. But what's happening is if you look back at Ethan Finley's career trajectory after 15, when everybody and their mother said, how is this kid not in the national team camp? And he does go to the national team camp, and he comes back, and he is not the same player.
Jurgen scared
same
him,
thing,
though.
Same thing with same thing with Trapp. Exactly. Same thing with who else went to the national team and
Chani.
Tony Chani. I mean, it's like okay, I'm not really liking this streak, and I don't want to see their development get stunted because of this. So I almost rather not see them go to national team camp until they are like developed and ready to go.
Parker's technically wasn't the same either.
Yeah. So but Parker's was like he would have probably played in this Gold Cup had he been, you know, not as old though. Anyway, but yeah, that's just how I feel right now about crew players that are playing well, that are developing, going to national team games.
He's ready,
or national
though.
Team camp in general.
He's ready. I think he's legitimately ready right now. He is better than Brad Guzan is right now. I'm not even joking. Brad Guzan sucks. Mm-hmm. He sucks.
I'd agree.
There is only one thing that he needs to do in order to make it to the national team, and that is to shave his head. Because he only called up.
And grow a beard?
No, the beard is optional, but you have to be bald in order to play in net for the United States.
Zach's got great locks, though.
I know, mm-hmm. But he's going to have to do it. It's the patriotic, correct thing to do is he's got to shave his head. But he is ready right now. Brad Guzan is too old to play for the United States men's national team. I'm sorry. I love him. He's too old. Hang it up. We went through this with Friedel a couple years ago. It was the exact same thing. They run these keepers too long.
If Guzan and Howard are old, then Raimondo is mummified.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Raimondo seems younger, though. I don't know why. He'll never die.
He's shorter for sure.
He still puts in a good performance, whereas Brad Guzan, some of these saves or things he should be saving. I just watched these, and I'm like, dude, how are you not saving that? An average MLS keeper saves that. But
distribution with the ball, which is awful too. And it's like, you now I remember why Aston Villa got relegated and almost got relegated in the championship last year. After a while, it looked like they were going to be.
He should not be playing.
I would say the one thing that I think is working against Zach is that there's a lot of good young keepers that are coming through right now. You know, I mean, obviously we mentioned Bill Hamid. I think he's kind of the next guy that they're looking at, you know, at only 25 years old, still really young for a goalkeeper. You know, I think Zach certainly is going to be in the conversation at some point in his career, especially, you know, if he continues to play the way he is. But, you know, if you look around, you know, United States goalkeepers, even in MLS, I mean, Tyler Miller in Seattle, John Kempen in Kansas City, Cody Cropper in New England. I mean, there's plenty of guys, you know.
Jesse Gonzalez, FC Dallas. Oh boy!
Yeah, and there's still. I mean, there's even some guys even younger than that. You know, I think it will be interesting to see, you know, where this goes. I think that right now they hope that Hamid is the next guy, and then, you know, there's going to be a battle for that group after him. You know, Zach Steffen certainly looks like he can be a potential future national team goalie, but I'm not sure at 21, 22. If he's going to get his shot quite yet.
You know what? If the crew defense was not nearly as leaky, he would be already in this conversation.
Well, and I think we were talking today about that because we were talking about some of his saves at practice. And, you know, we said if you put him with a Kansas City defense, you know, what is his goals against average? What do his numbers look like? And, you know, that certainly would help. But I still think that there's just this mentality, especially on a national team level, that – You know, you want a more veteran guy who's gotten more experience. I mean, you look around the world.
Someone who's played for Bruce Arena.
That could be
which
too,
is basically but, the other stipulation. It's, well, but you look for Bruce Arena.
Dan Kennedy's coming back then.
You look globally. I mean, even, you know, somewhere like Spain, it took a while for a guy like De Gea to take over, even though, you know, he was clearly one of the top up and coming goalkeepers. You know, Mueller in Germany, it took a while. I mean, he started pretty young, but you know, he'd been talked about for a while before then. So, you know, I just think that on an international level, you tend to want, and let's remember that goalies play much longer than field players. So Zach starting at 21 is kind of an anomaly, and the fact that he, you know, can be, at least be in the conversation, I think is impressive already.
Yeah. But David De Gea had to overcome Iker Casillas, one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time.
Yeah, but Casillas had taken a drastic step down by the time De Gea was ready, and they just kept bringing him in. I mean, even Real had moved on from Casillas at one point, and De Gea still wasn't getting a look.
But Casillas was doing better at an international level than he was for club, though.
I think Casillas will be better at 55 than Brad Guzan was in this last Gold Cup.
My God.
Well, I'm not arguing that Brad Guzan deserves a national team call-up anymore.
Hey,
I'm just saying.
Is Mitch Hildebrandt better than Brad Guzan?
Oh, I'm not touching that. I'm not touching that. I'm muting my mic. Bye.
I had to go there. I'm sorry.
For those who don't know, that's the FC Cincinnati goalkeeper who FC Cincinnati fans think is the greatest goalkeeper in the world when he is a second division United States goalkeeper.
To be fair, he was an MLS goalie like to start the year, and Minnesota decided to go with a New England reject over him.
To be fair, Thomas Mueller won a golden boot when he was 20 years old, too. So I don't know about that example.
Well, I don't know about that. I have to
fact check myself.
Can we
debate Joe Hart? And
I just did. But regardless, so we'll see what we have in stake for Zach Steffen, whether he gets that call up in January or whether he gets that call up during these Hex qualifiers before then. But Columbus Crew still have some business in front of them. A game coming up this weekend against San Jose. San Jose just below the red line out there in the Western Conference. But fellas, what do we think as this road trip goes on? You see Columbus getting their first road draw, or second road draw, I believe, of the campaign. And is that a good sign for this road trip, a good sign for this game against San Jose?
I think this game will be pretty interesting because, you know, once again, it's a travel, you know, all the way across the country, a team that you are not super familiar with. That you play once a year. So, you know, San Jose's had some decent results this year, kind of like Salt Lake. They've been up and down. We were talking to Kakuta Mane about the field there today, and he was talking about just it's a big field, which, you know, if for people that have been longtime MLS fans, San Jose used to be known for the really narrow field at Spartan Stadium at San Jose State, and now they've got this big expansive field, which I think could help Crew SC. And another advantage is they'll be coming in off of a full week, unlike when they went out to Salt Lake. So I think that you could definitely take some confidence out of the Salt Lake result, all the things that went into it. You know, I haven't done a ton of research on how San Jose's done aside from looking at their results, but you know, I think it could be an interesting game.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you know, I've always been excited with San Jose because they're either Jekyll or Hyde. They're either really on their game or they're just kind of off. And then sometimes they kind of go in between. But, you know, you're looking at Wondolowski, Dylan Sarin, I think is how you say his name, and then Bernardes is their big, nasty defender in the middle. That guy, I would expect to give Ola Kamara a couple fits in the middle there because he'll be bodying up on him pretty considerably. And then David Bingham, another one of those young keepers that we were talking about that's potentially in the U.S. national team picture, is definitely not one to be overlooked either. He's known to make a acrobatic save every once in a while.
Well, Chris Wondolowski, you know, we were talking about players that, fortunately, at least for him, that he's out of, it looks like, national team pictures because he's not big time. But you saw they had a 1-0 victory last weekend over the hapless Colorado Rapids. But a good possession, lots of shots on goal for them last time, leading in pretty much every metric. But again, this is a against the Colorado team that things have not been so great for them. Just 6 wins on the campaign, with 20 points, just 2 more points than bottom of the barrel DC United. Is this a game that if you're Columbus, you need to look at this as not just let's get a point on the road, but these are 3 points that you should be able to capture?
I mean, you know, MLS is, you know, I hate to beat the drum, but I'm still doing it. MLS is going to MLS, and, you know, it's tough because they've recently gone through a coaching change with firing Dom Kinnear at the start of the year, or maybe midpoint. It was a couple weeks ago. Everything's kind of blending together a little bit. And they got Chris Leitch, or Leitch. I'm not entirely sure how to say his name, but Tommy Thompson's coming into form.
You don't know how to say Chris Leitch, former Crew defender, Pickerington native, last name?
Crucify me.
Come on, Ralph. That's just bad.
I Come suck. On, I'm sorry. But Ameriquois is there. Tommy Thompson's coming into form. You know, they've got a good team. And there's no shame in, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say there's no shame in losing to them. But, you know, I don't think we should overlook them and say that it's going to be an instant 3 points.
No, it's not. I mean, it's never an instant 3 points. When you're going on the road in MLS, I think, you know, especially when you're traveling across the country, you have to take that into account. Time change, obviously they'll be playing later. You know, these are all things that I think, you know, people kind of gloss over a little bit, but are real things. You know, it's not easy to go, you know, to the West Coast and just pick up and play. You know, that's, you know, start times are usually 10:30 Eastern time. You know, so that's it's a little bit of throwing players off their rhythm and things like that. And just MLS games in general. I mean, we, you know, you saw the team go out and play well against Philadelphia, granted an undermanned Philadelphia team last week, and then get shellacked 3-0. So, you know, yes, I think Bart makes a point. Like, this is a team that has been struggling. You would certainly like to go out and get a full 3 road points, but you know, it's, you also have to be realistic about it and you know, kind of take what you can get out of this game. It'll be interesting, I think, to see how Federico Higuain comes along. Greg Berhalter said today that he is still day-to-day and, you know, really that, you know, he could wake up tomorrow, and I know he said this a couple weeks ago, but wake up tomorrow with the knee feeling better and take part in full training. He's been doing some running and stuff to keep his fitness levels up, so you know, obviously that would be a big boost to them. Harrison Offal did some running today, so we'll see what his availability is. And obviously the guys, you know, the 2 center backs who missed out on Saturday will be eager to get back into the lineup.
Some picks. I'll quick patronize our dear sponsors, then come back to you guys for some picks.
Yeah,
that sounds good. Yeah, we like it.
You want to talk about VAR, too?
I guess that is a good point. We can touch on that. So a little bit of housekeeping going on this week. Video instant replay coming to MLS. Like any big, you know, really, really professional league, they're making a significant rule change in the middle of the season that can impact the results, and I would argue would have, if it were installed in the beginning of the season, impacted results in games as they are. That said, you know, we got MLS, it's doing its thing. We've got video assistant replay coming in. Overall, I think it's for the good. What do you think, guys?
I think it, all in all, will be a positive if used correctly. They used it in the Confederations Cup, and I thought it was a massive fail. You know, I didn't think the referees really understood how to use it. You know, sometimes they reviewed things, sometimes they didn't. When they did review things, sometimes they spent way too long on it. Sometimes they didn't spend enough time. So, you know, I think obviously those referees didn't have the time to train with it. The MLS refs, I think, have been pretty familiarized with what can be reviewed, what can't be. I know that the the referee found, was it Pro, went around to each of the teams and, you know, had a sit down with the staff and the players about what to expect from it, what can be reviewed, what can't, all sorts of things. So it seems like they've done their due diligence. You know, it is an interesting timing to put it in here at the beginning of August, but, you know, I think going forward, it could certainly be a positive. I just don't want to see games, you know, get drawn out because there's, you know, a big stoppage in play because of a call or things like that. If, you know, we're going to keep to the spirit of soccer, I'd like to see things handled quickly. And it sounds like they've kind of organized it that way, but there is a really good video. It's an hour long, so it takes some time to watch, but on YouTube, if you go to the MLS soccer page, and you can even just Google MLS and VAR, I think it comes right up, that explains, you know, the ins and outs of VAR and how it will be used. Because there's a lot of things that I think people expect to be reviewed that may not. For instance, Berhalter was talking today that, you know, you have to have a call that would be like, I forget the exact term they use, but major error by the referee, and that's what's going to create the review. And, you know, he used the example of Jonathan Mensah's red card last week, and he was arguing more that it, you know, it was probably outside the box, but that may not, you know, trigger a review just because it's not an obvious error by the referee. It's just such a close play. So something like that, you know, isn't necessarily going to be reviewed. But, you know, I recommend people who are interested going and taking some time and watching that video on YouTube.
Are they going to have, like, a coach's challenge or anything like that?
No, it's all done by the referees who will, like, there's a referee. So there'll be people up in the box who will, if they think that there's something that needs to be reviewed, will, you know, I guess communicate that to the referee. I assume it's through the earpieces that they wear. And then the referee makes, like, a box shape with his fingers to indicate that he's going to review, and then he'll go over to the sidelines and he's able to go back and watch it and whatnot, and kind of reevaluate the play from, and they use the broadcast cameras, so they're not seeing anything that wouldn't be shown on television.
I think this would be really interesting to see how it affects the level of refereeing in MLS and refereeing overall. Like, there's been some World Cup games where you're supposed to have the best of the best referees and that have pooped the bed and affected really final results. So do we think that this will help? Will it help more than goal line technology? Will it help more than adding a fourth referee? I don't know. But I think it would be interesting to see how it affects how the referees calculate their decisions. I'd love to get our friend Jim back on from the he's our crew team liaison that works with the referees and see how he breaks that down. So I'll talk to him. We'll see what we can do.
I'm optimistic for VAR. I think it's going to be a good thing for the game, and I like what Sam said about referee accountability. You know, Pro's been the subject of a lot of skepticism. I know a couple of our colleagues have really put them under kind of a microscope at times, including myself.
And also Greg Berhalter last week.
Yes, but, you know, they've been the subject of a lot of skepticism, and I think this will be a nice kind of an accountability, especially for, you know, your Ishmael Alfas, your Teddy Uncles, anybody of those types of officials. But, you know, like Pat said, I mean, he did a great job with breaking down VAR. It's done really well. I like at least the concept of it. I got a little taste of it in the Confederations Cup final. Unfortunately, the one call that I did see them use VAR, it was for a case of mistaken identity and an elbow call as well, which should have been, in my opinion, a straight red. But, you know, they gave the guy a yellow, and it was a mistaken identity as well. But
I believe that is called the Shaggy defense.
It wasn't me. You know, and it was interesting, and I like the concept of, you know, they kind of almost treat it like a hydration break with the added time. So it's however much time they take looking at it, they just add it on an additional time towards the end of the match or the end of the half. You know, but I think it's a good thing for the game. It's going to take a lot of adjustments. But, you know, we said the same thing, too, in the NFL when they added instant replay.
I'm going to – oh, yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
I don't know. I think this is going to help a little bit, but I don't think it's going to solve the problem. I think you're just going to have subpar referees looking at video rather than really qualified referees. So I think it will give them a second chance to get it right, but I'm still not sure it's going to make that much of a difference. One thing I'm really curious to see is eventually they're going to get a call wrong on replay, I think. And when that starts to happen, I think you might see people start to throw out the Don Garber's fixing match kind of conspiracy theory crap.
Not where I was going.
That's already going on, but
well, but it's also gonna highlight mistakes that they make on a regular basis and give TV commentators and fans a minute to kind of bash the referees for making a bad call or for needing VAR in a situation and things like that. The other thing I'm really curious to see is how this is used when it comes to the high profile players. One thing we have seen a lot in Major League Soccer historically is one set of rules for kind of your Joe Schmo MLS players, and then another set of rules for your DPs, your Jermaine Joneses, your Andrea Pirlos, your whoever.
Are we talking MLS or the NBA?
MLS, yeah, I know. I think you get a lot of guys. Who did I say?
No, you were on point.
You said MLS. I just was making a joke that happens there too.
I wasn't sure if I mentioned an NBA player. If I said LeBron James or something by mistake. No, but I mean, when the playoffs roll around and you have this desire from the front office of Major League Soccer corporate to have all their big names, big players in these games. If a VAR call is made against, you know, David Villa, are you going to give them a card that's going to suspend them for a semifinal? Are you going to suspend, you know, a Jermaine Jones type of player, a Nigel De Jong type player for one of these big games? That's a big test for pro and for Major League Soccer. I think this league has got to get to a point where they're going to call these things fairly, and this is going to highlight whether or not it's fair. And so the league has to step up and use this thing responsibly. I think they will, but if they don't, there's going to be a big, big outcry pretty quick.
Patrick, I had a question for you that I just thought of when Alex was talking is, you know, similar to other sports, like we were talking about the NBA where they show replays in the stadium, as the ref is looking at this on VAR, will the crowd have access to looking at this instant replay as well?
I don't know. That'll be interesting. I think that's probably at the discretion of the stadium, most likely the team and whatnot, but I don't know that for sure. I know that the crew are not great about showing replays on things on the scoreboard, and I know that because my seat in the press box, I cannot see the little TV in there. So I usually have to watch MLS live behind the play, but yeah, I don't know if they'll do it. I think it'll probably depend on the team, but that's a good question.
Counterpoint to all this, VAR is really just going to be like a sort of Tinder thing on Don Garber's phone, where an instant replay comes up that's, you know, there to be questioned, and Don Garber just swipes left or right if he wants the call to stand. I'm going with that.
Isn't that Bumble more so than anything? Because you've got a matchup.
This is all in Don Garber's
hands.
Let's
not go into the details of dating apps and our experiences with them right now.
I wasn't gonna say Tinder, but I was gonna say more like how the NHL up in Toronto, and the call always goes against Columbus.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's okay. We're going to Toronto, and then Toronto's like, yeah, screw 'em.
It was a kicking motion. It's not a goal. Never mind.
I think what they need to do is they need to make a solid gold throne for Don Garber out of all of the secret profits that Major League Soccer has made over the last 10 years and put that throne on the top of whatever stadium hosts Major League Soccer Cup, MLS Cup, and then just have him sitting there like Joaquin Phoenix with his thumb and then up or down. And then they can just show that on the big board.
I thought you were gonna make an Iron Throne reference from Game of Thrones.
Oh no, no, Gladiator, even better. And
that's
predictions.
That's delightful.
Yeah, yeah, fellas, start thinking about think about what Don Garber's actually doing, what VAR actually is. But while you're thinking about that, also think about San Jose, while you are devoted listeners, I want you to think about what you're doing this weekend to watch the Crew SC game, because may I posit, that you should visit one of our terrific sponsors. Those would be Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, or the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. Both of them are, as the kids would say, lit joints to watch a soccer match. It's a lot of fun, so check them both out. You might be able to catch some of us there. I'm sure you'll be able to catch a whole bunch of Crew SC fans and join adult beverage or two. They usually have some food trucks too, so if you want to get some good food, it will be Lit Fam, Crew SC playing San Jose and Patrick Murphy. What will be the outcome?
As I said earlier, I think I haven't given San Jose, I haven't seen much of San Jose this year. So follow up with me on the when we do our predictions on the website later in this week. But just kind of looking at things here, this is a team that's been really good at home. You know, 6-1-4. Scrolling through some of their recent results, they seem to be, as Ralph said it earlier, Jekyll and Hyde. But the Jekyll seems to be the home games, and the Hyde seems to be the road games, or vice versa. I'm not really sure how that works. I read that book a long time ago. But so I would expect a good performance from them. I think the West is certainly down this year. This is a team that sits in seventh place. But like Bart pointed out earlier, you know, 36 points is top of the East, and, you know, that's, you know, middle of the playoff race top of the West. That's middle of the playoff race in the East. So, I think Columbus can go out there and get another draw. I'll probably go with like I'll go with a 1-1 scoreline right now.
1-1 from Patrick Murphy. Ralph, what are you thinking?
Echoing everything that Murph said, it's the thing about MLS is if you're decently good at home and you're moderately okay on the road, you're going to be fine. But this year, it's really weird with the West because you've got such a crazy shakeup going on out there where they're just – it's a strange down year for them. That being said, Bingham is very good. Wondolowski will probably my really bold prediction is Wondolowski is going to sky the game winning goal over the bar. I still never will forgive you for that, Wando. So if you're listening,
nor should you. No one has.
So I'm going to go. I'm going to be unpopular. A 2-1 scoreline in favor of the Earthquakes.
Just use that sound effect from Patrick's preview of the MLS All-Star Game for that pick. We'll get that there in post. Heading over now to Alex Stanek. Alex, Sunshine Brigade, this, bring us back. Bring us off the ledge.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I have forgiven. I can't even think of his name.
Wondolowski.
I was thinking Robert Lewandowski all of a sudden. There,
that's his distant cousin.
Yeah, but he actually finishes.
That's his Polish cousin, yeah. No, I have forgiven Wando for what happened against Belgium. I believe that was against Belgium, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've forgiven him. It happens. I still had a good day. Wando, you're forgiven. I think it's going to be 1-1. I think we can get a point. And I think our defense is going to perform much better than what we saw in Salt Lake. But, yeah, I don't see us getting 3 points from this game. But I think 1 point on the road is acceptable, and I think that's something we can hope to get.
Who scores the goal for Crew SC?
Radamel Falcao. Next question.
Yes. At least it's not the Kaká bandwagon. Like
who gets the assist?
Christian Martinez.
All right. We got 1-1 there from Alex. Sam, what are we thinking?
I'm actually going to be here with the bandwagon too, because they're getting a week's rest, but it's a whole going out to the West and playing a team in San Jose. The most optimistic would be a 2-2 tie, is what I'm looking at.
2-2 from Sam. I appreciate a little bit. Don't worry, guys. I'll get all Homer for us. I got a 2-1 win for Columbus. As of yet to not pick the Crew to win a game. If they're going by my picks, they would be the Invincibles right now of MLS. But unfortunately, they are not. But I think Lalas Abubakar comes back. He is hungry. He is pissed because of that BS red. Well, the red card was kind of legit, but his first yellow wasn't. And so he comes in to keep with the 2014 World Cup theme. Shades of John Brooks just heads it down with authority for the game winner in the 80th the 80th minute after 1-1. You know, it was tied up 1-1. And Columbus gets the win, and they go on to go undefeated the rest of the season and win MLS Cup. Wow. Yep. Yeah, I know. Really,
you're just
walking
the whole
blitz
season
there.
Out there, aren't you?
Yeah, no. They've got this wrapped up. You get this one win against San Jose, and that's the last hurdle to this team going undefeated.
Oh dear.
Interesting.
No, I kid about that, but I do think Columbus will win 2-1. Well, fellas, any other parting shots here as we're getting ready to wrap this sucker up?
Yeah, I want to clarify that earlier I met Manuel Neuer, not
Thomas Mueller.
Yeah, that didn't really make sense in the context of what I was saying. I also want everyone who was a fan of Chris Leach to tweet at Ralph and tell him he needs to know Crew SC history better.
I also want to make a parting shout too, which is a little weird, to the communications department. A certain Dilly Duca is still listed on the team roster on the website, so we need to get rid of that, please.
I say just keep him up there. Let's just keep him up there, and he can be there every season.
It's a reminder for like players, and it's like, no, anyone can be gone.
But keep his age updated, so like 30 years from now, they'll say he's 56 years old.
And that'll keep really boost the average age of the team.
That's a true. Youth movement. That's a good point.
Keep his MLS games played updated, in that there probably won't be any added.
It's funny you mention that, because he is sitting at a goose egg right now. And Tony Chani actually is on there now that I'm looking at the list as well.
See, you write him off, and players like this always get written off, and they're never going to be back in MLS, blah, blah, blah. Look at who's in the MLS All-Star Game. That's all I got to say. For FC Dallas, just take a look.
Mitchell,
you will see someone familiar.
Matt Hedges. Oh, Hernan Grana. Yeah. No.
My boy.
Yeah.
He's, I remember.
Yeah.
Ralph, I'm not sure what you're looking at, because Duca's not on the roster.
I will link what I'm looking at to you right now.
You guys are getting some enthralling denouement, if you will, for those of you that are the literary types here. Well, that should do it.
Ralph,
you're
looking at the stats
week.
Page.
Ralph,
like,
say that
like,
again.
That's too fancy for me. That's what I said.
It's too fancy for him.
Are we making a drop that oh, God, I'm scared.
Bye, buddies.
Bart, finish.
I don't know. Yep,
finish.
Yep. Like bye, Anthony buddy. Scaramucci, we are out. Bye, buddy.
Was the prototype like three stacks on that CD? An example of the perfect candidate now. All your girlfriends say that you don't want to see me.
Hey, you remember when Scaramucci was hired? My milk is still fresh. So, all right.
It is still live, Ralph.
I know.
That shit's broken. Lie, 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 I tried to hide, but now you know it. That I'm at an all-time my pride, but that shit's broken. That shit's broken. Lie, 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 try to hide. Now you know it. That I'm at an all-time low.